Welcome to the Capital News. I'm your host, Alex Kroitis. Today is Monday, October 19th, 2020. Thank you so much for joining me. Hope you all enjoyed your weekend. The title of today's podcast, More Spending, Put Up or Shut Up. It appears that today, with the broad market sell-off on Wall Street, that finally talk has turned into cheapness. They want some action. We mentioned this last week, a couple weeks ago, that there was going to come a time, if everything went by the previous playbook, of which we have witnessed for the past couple years with this administration and pumping this stock market and using headlines, especially with relations to the U.S.-China trade talks. Remember that nonsense? Anytime the market seemed to sell, oh, just send somebody out there, Mnuchin, Kudlow, President Trump himself. Oh, yeah, we're working, everything's swimmingly well. We're in the final laps, final stages. It's going to be a huge deal, the best deal ever, and the markets ate it up. And then, of course, there came the day where that didn't work anymore, and then something actually had to come to fruition. And what came to fruition, again, with respect to the U.S.-China trade deal, that phase one, was not good, and the markets didn't care for it. No surprise. Well, it could be playing out the same way today. Now, this is only one day, and as we'll get to overnight futures, this could already be reversing. But nonetheless, the markets were expecting some stimulus, something to have been worked out over the weekend. That was not the case. For something to get worked out today during the trading session, that did not happen. So there was a big market sell-off. Now, this to me, again, is completely ridiculous. This is not how this is supposed to work. We do not have a market, but it's the stock market, so that's what we're going to call it, right? But it's not a market. This is Candyland. This is ridiculous stuff that's taking place. It's a banana republic. It's the printing press that's keeping these financial assets elevated. Soaring housing prices, you name it. But there's no inflation. There's nothing like that. No. Well, that's another day. So put up or shut up. And this is also something that's interesting, as I noted earlier, too, with regards to the president's fascination and obsession with the stock market. This is very easy to identify that he is obsessed with the stock market and uses it as his barometer on which he judges himself, and I guess how the country is supposed to judge the president. Because most people don't understand fractional reserve banking. They don't understand that what the Federal Reserve is, what it does, who the people on the board are, the president. They don't understand that stuff. So they just think, well, the stock market's up, everything must be good. Well, like I've been saying, do you want it to go up at any expense, even if that expense is the abolishment of a marketplace, a true marketplace with price discovery? If it further leads to wealth and income inequality that further drives economic decay, social decay, and political decay? Do you want your 401k to go up at that expense? I would hope not. If you consider yourself an American, if you consider yourself patriotic, I would hope not. So I hope you ponder that question. But with this, because the president is so fascinated and obsessed with the stock market, it becomes a weakness for him. An Achilles heel, if you will. That can be exploited against him and against the United States by default by a foreign power. Or maybe now with the stimulus talks, even domestic political opponents. Which gives, in this instance, Speaker of the House Nancy Pelosi quite a bit of leverage. Because she knows this, as crazy as Nancy is, she understands that the president is obsessed with the stock market. And she clearly understands that the market is looking and waiting for another spending package. And she knows that the president needs it. And she knows that the Republicans don't want to sign off on this one, at least not anything like the Nobody Cares Act. I mean, maybe a trillion and a half they can tolerate, which for a little context is twice the amount of TARP, the Troubled Asset Relief Program, back during the Great Financial Crisis. So this is just laughable on its face that now all of a sudden the Republicans, the conservatives, the fiscal conservatives, are all of a sudden concerned about the financial well-being of this country. It's laughable and it's an insult to your face. But now they want to play hardball, and that's why President Trump has come out on a number of occasions wanting to go even bigger than what the Democrats are willing to do, because the president knows also that this is juicing the markets. So Nancy has the leverage. She knows that there's some infighting between the White House and the Republican Party, and she wants the bigger bill. She wants more spending. They don't care. So she's using this, I think, quite possibly as leverage. Oh, we'll drip it out. We'll play hardball. We'll see if the president sweats. It's a big game of chicken. And of course, in the middle, it's the American people. They don't care about us. Again, another prime example. They can give billions and trillions away to corporate America and corporations around the world, but to the American people, screw you. You're going to get caught in the crossfire of this. Again, I'm against all these bailouts, but I'm just pointing out the facts of the case. They're not listening to me. So Nancy's got Trump where she wants him. Now, what Trump is going to have to do is convince the Republicans to sign off on something bigger, because that's probably what's coming down the pike. So again, my number is still at $1.9 trillion, but maybe it will be north of $2. But that's a rounding error amongst friends. Who cares at this juncture? You want to spend $4, $5, $6, $7 trillion? Go ahead, do it. Surely if $2 trillion is good, $4 trillion must be twice as good. No negative side effects, no consequences. What's the concern? So that's something that we're going to continue to monitor. And then, of course, overnight futures trading nonetheless. Seems before Election Day that something might actually take place on Tuesday. Which means both chambers of Congress can vote on it and pass on it. And it can land on the president's desk, who, of course, will happily sign it into law. And again, that is money that we do not have. Okay? Just so you understand this. But nonetheless, futures trading, Dow Jones Industrial Average is up about 0.5%. The S&P 500 is up about 0.7%. The NASDAQ 100 is up about 0.9%. Again, on the hopes of, again, headlines, there might be a stimulus deal. Japanese markets down 0.5% in cash trade. And a sea of red across the pond in Europe. A mixed bag, but down about 0.5 percentage point across the board. The Australian trade is also down about 0.7%. On the dollar index front, trading lower, but still with a 93 handle, not trading at 93 spot 4 on the dollar index. Weakness against the euro and the British pound and the Swiss franc, and some strength for the dollar against the Aussie and the New Zealand kiwi. On the commodity front, crude oil, WTI, is 9 cents. Brent is at $42.23. And natural gas is at $2.85. Gold and silver were doing decently well throughout the trading session, but then also sold off a little bit at the end of the day. Spot gold is right at $1,900 an ounce, and spot silver is at $24.48. Over the past couple of weeks, we have seen some forecasts by Goldman Sachs and Citi has silver at $40 an ounce some point next year. I, of course, am in agreement with that, and I think it can go quite a bit higher, especially if they put the printing curve, Bank of Japan, Bank of England, People's Bank of China, all around the horn. They're doing it. They're talking about a digital currency now. You know, that's probably not a surprise to a lot of people out there. Even the Federal Reserve is putting out a note that they are contemplating it. This, again, anytime these idiots come out and say they're contemplating something, it's going to happen. It's just a question of when. There is even a report out with the IMF or a memo calling for another Bretton Woods situation. And we've talked about Bretton Woods before. Basically, just how the world got together after World War II to agree upon a global financial system, which made the dollar the reserve currency, and it was backed by gold. Okay, now it's backed by nothing. It's complete fiat, and this is the mess that we have grown into because there's no restriction. Gold was the restriction. Gold was the anchor. you had limitations. Even though some of those were broken, it was at least still somewhat anchored. Once Nixon completely removed us from the gold standard in 1971, that was it. And you can go back and look at so much data, as we discussed in our book, The Cynic's Guide to Investing. From that point on, that's really when you started all of this insanity. That was the breaking point, 1971, and it was just all downhill from there. So that was an interesting development from the IMF. So basically, if they want to go through another Bretton Woods, what that signals is that the dollar might be in trouble, as we have been stating here for quite a while, and it could lose its global reserve status. What are they going to come up with? We know that the Chinese and the Russians and the Turks and the Iranians have been working on something themselves. We discussed that last year. That's still in the works. We know that other central banks are looking into digital currencies and rolling them out as well, particularly the People's Bank of China. So something's going to happen. It's just a question of when and what it's going to be and how it affects everybody. Those are a lot of unknowns. And I don't expect any central bank anywhere to have a good communications team in explaining all of this. Not for a second. These are the jokers that got us into this mess, and now all of a sudden we're supposed to believe, oh, well, we're going to create our own digital currency, that everything's going to be honky-dory. I don't think so. I mean, I wasn't born last night. Don't be stupid here. So that's something that we're going to continue to monitor. And just to throw another tidbit of information on that, we've had governors of the Bank of England calling out the reserve status of the U.S. dollar as well. The Bank of England! The UK, an ally of the United States, calling this into question. And if the US dollar does lose its reserve status, it's not going to be too good here for the living standards in the United States. Just a heads up, but this is something we've been discussing here for quite a while. That'll just be extreme dollar weakness, because there's not going to be as much demand for those dollars for other countries to hold those dollars as a reserve currency. It'll be a basket, it'll be these digital currencies, who knows? Maybe they'll end up backing these currencies, even if it's digital, with gold or silver, perhaps. I have no idea what they're going to do. But they're concerned, evidently. They want this going digital. That can be complete control. That can be complete and utter control if they get away with this. Because, I mean, most money is digital anyway. About 97% is digital, and about 3% is, you know, you actually have the currency in your pocket. But if it's entirely digital, they're in control. They're in complete control. And who knows, if you don't behave a certain way, China has their social credit score over there, right? They know what you're doing. They know what you're buying, how you're spending. If you're saying something line that they don't want to hear, oh, you're shut down. You can't go and buy, sell anything until you behave the way we want you to. This is Orwellian here. This is ridiculous. I don't trust this thing, because this is a coordinated effort by the central banks in conjunction with federal governments. So chances are it's coming, unless there is some sort of global revolution that puts a stop to it. Barring that, we're going to have some sort of digital currency in the not too distant future. So that's that. And then on the bond front, we have Uncle Sam's 10-year junk note yielding 0.77%. So that yield is a little bit higher for the day. So some more selling on the bond front. And these yields have been creeping higher. And I don't think it's because they're predicting economic growth. Can't be. There's too much carnage waiting in the wings. But it could be inflation. Bonds don't like inflation. But it's really anybody's guess. These day-to-day moves, I don't like talking about them too much as to what it actually means. I'd like to see more of a trend. But if this trend continues upward, I'm not going to be buying any type of growth story, but I will buy an inflation event, because we have the MOVE index, the volatility index for the bond market, at all-time lows. Interest rate volatility is also at all-time lows. So the calm before the storm, as far as I see it. Even the VIX has remained elevated despite this massive rally in the stock market, and it could be breaking out of a little technical pattern as well to the upside. And typically when you see a spike or a big move to the upside with respect to the volatility index, that usually means that there is a big drop-off in the stock market. Now, is Nancy and Trump and Mnuchin, are they going to come to the rescue and put all that volatility down, keep it down? Or is the market going to have its way with all of this nonsense? Now, I think at the end of the day, the market will have its day and will have its say with all of this nonsense, but I don't know if it's going to be this week. Your guess is as good as mine on that, but markets always win because nobody is bigger than the market. So more money, more spending, put up or shut up. We'll keep you posted on that. Now, to some early vote turnout. This is from the Election Project. You can Google Election Project. This is run from a professor out of the University of Florida, I think. He tries to do keep everything updated as far as the early vote turnout. We talked a little bit about this last week. Well, right now, we are at 31.1 million votes already cast. 31.1 million. As a percentage of the 2016 turnout, we are at 22.5%. So that is huge. And as I stated last week, before Election Day, we could be at 50%. And at this rate, we might be even higher than that. So that can have its pros and cons. One of the pros, of course, is we're more likely going to know who the winner is on November 3rd or November 4th. Some of the cons, I guess you could say, is, well, more information could come out between now and then, and, you know, that might sway people's opinion. Maybe, maybe not. I mean, people have made up their mind. I know there's that story circulating out there with Joe Biden, Hunter Biden in the laptop and all this crap, and, you know, again, the timing of it. This is just rinse, repeat, 2016 all over again. Lock her up, lock him up, lock them all up. I mean, it's the same song and dance. It worked in 2016, so I guess they think it can work again. This is the little boy who cried wolf one too many times, and I'm not going to believe it. I'm just not going to believe it. We've heard this crap for 4 years, and nothing has happened. So now, all of a sudden, 2 weeks before an election, I'm not to think that coincidental, and I'm to think that this is 100% true now? I don't think so. But you can believe what you want to believe. So again, 31.1 million votes, already 4 million out of Texas, over 3 million out of California, about 2.5 million out of the state of Florida. And I'll give you the breakdown percentage-wise, too. About 1.5 million out of the state of Georgia. Of course, we knew about the very long lines last week. North Carolina also at 1.5 million. Michigan at 1.5 million. Ohio at 1.2 million. And some other states not too far behind. Now, on a percentage basis as to what's already turned out, Texas is already at 45.3% of 2016's turnout. So we can most definitely be halfway there because it's already almost halfway there in Texas alone. Again, 45.3%. New Mexico is at 33%. Arizona is at 30%, where the president was campaigning heavily today, and that was a state that he won. So clearly, the Trump campaign has some concerns about Arizona turning blue. Now, this has been a very red state for quite a while. So the fact that he is there is indicative that the polls that we have been discussing and most of the analysts have been discussing must hold some water and are giving the Trump campaign some concern. You have to look at where people are going. That tells you what they're concerned about. The state of Nevada is at about 18%. California is at 20%. Again, this is as of 2016 turnout, a percentage thereof. Georgia is at about 36%. Florida, 26%. What's another big one? Michigan is at 31.5%. So, if you're going to do some of the Electoral College map math, it's still jump ball. It's still anybody's game. The president is the president. He pulled an inside straight in 2016. He can win again. There's no doubt in my mind that he can win again. But the Electoral College math, with the polls, with where the president has been going, I mean, he was even in Georgia. Where he has been going tells me that they are also seeing, the Trump campaign, is also seeing some concerns within some of these traditional red states and states that the president carried in 2016. So, the president can win Nevada, which he lost in 2016. He can re-win Arizona. He can re-win Iowa. And there's some back and forth as to who's going to win Iowa because that Senate seat is hotly contested. The president can re-win Texas. He can re-win Florida, in Georgia, in North Carolina, in Ohio. And he will still lose. He will still come up a few electoral votes short. Even if you threw in one of the districts in Maine and the other one district out of Nebraska, he's still coming up short. If Biden should win Wisconsin, Michigan, and Pennsylvania. So that blue wall that Trump kind of destroyed last time, and again, not by many votes at all, by the skin of his teeth, he needs to at least get Michigan. Well, he can get one of them in that scenario if he should really pull that royal flush of getting Nevada, just basically everything he got last time, except that blue wall. But if he can pull in one of them, Wisconsin, Michigan, or Pennsylvania, he will win re-election. But that is an uphill battle. Most of the data that I'm looking at has Michigan pretty solid for Joe Biden. Same goes for Wisconsin, especially with this big surge in COVID-19 cases. Will that cast doubt further on some of those voters in Wisconsin? And Pennsylvania, of course, is still somewhat up for grabs, but leading and leaning towards Joe Biden. And I do believe President Barack Obama is finally going to be hitting the campaign trail for Joe Biden, sort of, I guess, in an attempt to be the closer. And he will be in Philadelphia sometime this week. So if Joe Biden can carry Pennsylvania, Michigan, and Wisconsin, it's pretty much game over, even if he loses Nevada, which was a state that Hillary Clinton carried in 2016. But there can be some upsets elsewhere. This is really a jump ball. Both campaigns are concerned. The Democrats don't want a recurrence of 2016 where people get complacent. They think the polls got this locked up. Stay home. Nope, you got the Biden campaign out this weekend saying, do not stay home, get out and vote, vote, vote. Do not just go with these national polls. Get out there and vote. Don't make it happen. Don't let 2016 happen again. Of course, that's what the Democrats are going to say. And with this early voter turnout, people might be heeding that advice. They might be saying, okay, you know what? We're going to do it. We're going to get out. We're not going to stay home this time. We did that last time, and we got Donald Trump, and we don't like him. We don't want another 4 years of this. And of course, there can be people in those lines who didn't vote in 2016 who are out voting for Donald Trump because they think he was just unfairly treated these 3.5, 4 years because of the Democrats and the media. And that's another valid argument. But this, to me, is more evidence as to why this two-party system, which is really one party, has to go. It has to go. This is all the bickering. This country is the one that is suffering. This country is the one that is caught in the crossfire. It's the people. These politicians, they have their paycheck, they have their salaries, they got their fancy pensions. They don't got to worry. And if they lose their seat, guess what? They're going to get a lucrative job on Wall Street, corporate America, lobbying. Don't worry about these idiots. Don't worry about them. They're not too concerned about you. All right, with all these shenanigans that they want to play. Holding you hostage with the spending bill. Corporate America can get that money. Federal Reserve will give it to everybody. If you're a corporation, doesn't matter if you need it or not. You could be the largest company in the world. They're going to give you some money. They're going to buy your debt. No questions asked. How much more evidence do you need? But I know most of you are going to go vote for a Republican or a Democrat and hope that something changes, but it's not going to, because it's the same people, it's the same song and dance. And you have to wake up and you have to make a stand at some point here. Then this Thursday is going to be the final debate. Should have been the third debate, but it's going to be the second debate between President Trump and former Vice President Joe Biden. I don't know. Your guess is as good as mine. What's going to happen? Is it going to be another you-know-what show? I hope not. The debate commission, I guess, is saying that they are going to mute the mics, at least for part of the back and forth, to make sure that somebody, the other candidate, of course, is not interrupted during the initial 2 minutes. I don't think that's a good move. And it's really not going to stop anybody from interrupting. Because if Donald Trump is screaming at you from 12 feet away, you're still going to hear him. And if Joe Biden is still screaming at Trump from 12 feet away, Trump's still going to hear him. It's just not going to be picked up on the microphone for, I guess, the rest of us here, but we're going to both see their mouths running a mile a minute, interrupting each other. I don't like it. But when you have a you-know-what show in the first one, I mean, this makes people do things that they otherwise thought they wouldn't have done before. So it's anybody's guess how that's going to turn out. Is it going to turn anybody to vote for Trump, turn anybody to vote for Biden? I don't know. I really think most of the country has already made up their minds. You either want 4 more years of this or you don't. And that's really what it's going to come down to. And for those, you know, obviously who have been with me know that I am voting the Libertarian ticket, Joe Jorgensen. And I don't want you to get the feeling that I'm naive on this. Joe Jorgensen is not going to be a savior, okay? But I don't look at the presidency as the panacea. The president is not king or queen or dictator. That's not how it works in this country. But everybody thinks that the president is supposed to be the cure-all. That's ridiculous. That's not what this country stands for. You, we, the people, are supposed to be the cure-all. Not these politicians. Not the president. It's not how this is supposed to work. But what I am saying with respect to the Libertarian ticket, this country needs to be educated. That's why I do this podcast. I want to help people, want to educate people on the structural issues that are facing this country and have been facing this country for a very long time. And now we are just well into that exponential growth curve where it is just spiraling out of control. And people are more concerned with wearing a mask in a pandemic, what beans to eat, and whether a statue should remain standing or be removed, whether you should say under God during the Pledge of Allegiance, or whether you can stand or kneel during the national anthem. Yeah, we can discuss these things, but these aren't structural. I mean, what are you going to do if somebody kneels for the national anthem? You're going to kill them? What are you going to do? If they say under God during the Pledge of Allegiance, or they don't say, what are you going to do? Take them out and beat them? What are you going to do? Is that solving any of the structural issues? No, not one. Not one. That's what the Libertarian Party would bring. It would bring a national discussion to these issues that nobody wants to talk about. Because if you start talking about them on the mainstream media and everybody's now understanding what's going on, they're going to say they've been screwed. They've been taken for suckers for too long by this two-party system. And the system does not want that to happen. And gee, I wonder why. So that's what I'm talking about. It's education. That's what the Libertarian Party will bring. You're not going to get it from Donald Trump, clearly. And you're not going to get it from Joe Biden either, clearly. But go get your sticker that says you voted and vote for one of these jokers. But don't be surprised that nothing changes. More spending, put up or shut up. And we could say that for a lot of things. Stay diversified, stay vigilant, and stay with the Capital News. I am Alex Caritas. Godspeed.